Okay, so yeah, today I want to talk about a project I did with Martin and Fernanda at IBM Research last summer when I was there as an intern. And I myself am from the University of Toronto. Okay, so we've seen a lot of work over the past couple of years. There's been this explosion in text visualization. So if we take a single document, for example, there are several projects that will do simple word counting techniques to get us a list of the types of words that are used in that document. Sorry, I'm having trouble with the microphone falling off. So if we move up to a larger scale of documents, so something in the hundreds, for example, we might want to use a system that has some sort of document comparison. So then we're still using word counts, simple measures, and we have systems like FeatureLens or the GIST icons that allow us to do comparisons across tens, hundreds of documents. If we go even another order of magnitude higher and we look at larger collections of documents, something in the thousands, we are now making systems that are approaching use, long-term use by data experts. For example, we're doing more complex natural language processing, and we see things like Attenix Patterns or the Topic Maps project. And these are just you know, examples. There have been lots and lots of projects in these areas in the last couple of years. So our question now is then, how can we do the thousands of documents level without having to do this complex natural language processing? So our audience is domain experts in a particular field of text. For example, we're working with legal experts. And we don't want to have, we don't want to use these advanced NLP techniques, which are great if you actually know how they work and you understand what's going on. For example, actually that was a really nice complimentary talk just then with Patricia. But we want to get away from the black box, but we want to get a little bit more advanced than simple word counting. So the problem that motivated this work originally was the idea of forum shopping in the legal domain. So if we think about, if you in the U.S. you can bring your case to a particular court district that you might think may be more favorable to the to give you a judgment that's in your favor, and this was a big thing in the early time of the U.S. courts of appeals when people would bring their patent cases to the Seventh Circuit. And it actually caused the creation of the reorganization of the court system to make patent cases a federal thing that's equal across the whole country to avoid this. So the idea here was that if we can detect words that are used more often than expected in a particular court district, maybe that's an indication of forum shopping. So here's a little mini law school, and don't worry, I'm from Canada, and I don't really know very much about the U.S. court system either, so if you just bear with me for a second. So the U.S. courts are made up of three different levels. So we have district courts, the federal courts of appeal, called the circuit courts, and the Supreme Court. And the level of the data that we're looking at is the entire history of the federal courts of appeal and the Supreme Court. So we have about 600,000 documents. The circuit courts are made up of multi-state regions. They're numbered for the most part, except for we have also this DC circuit and federal circuit, which deal with special sorts of cases. For example, the Fifth Circuit is a multi-state region containing these southern states. So the data itself is the U.S. Federal Reporters. It's public domain data, the written court decisions of the different court districts. We have, like I said, 628,000 documents. It's about equivalent to about 48,000 copies of Dante's Inferno or 12 gigabytes of text. Judges are not easy people to work with when you're using their data. We've got things like, the explanans does not match the explicandum, and therefore I respectfully dissent. So the cases, they don't always necessarily agree with one another. So we have a case that contains perhaps more than one decision, where we have consent in part, dissent in part, or I dissent, I consent, whatever. So the judges are not always authoring one decision amongst themselves. So this is an example of one of the cases that we used. It's from publicresource.org, and it's... they did some original markup on the data to separate out different sections, but it was actually quite error-prone, so we had to reprocess all the data from scratch to detect these different facets within the text. So the data facets that we actually ended up using for this presentation or for this example prototype were the main opinion decisions, so that's the red box on the left, the court district that the court case comes from, the circuit, and the time period that the case was heard in. So just a little brief overview of the types of data processing we did. So We have a large text analysis infrastructure where we are able to detect and separate those parts of the text that I just showed you. We apply some very simple NLP techniques, but I want to draw your attention here to the fact that we do reversible stemming. So we take a word like going and we turn it into go, but then we reverse that in the end. So we have a back-end database that is able to take all the stemmed words, and before we present them to the end user, we put back the most common ending so that it becomes readable again. We remove some stop words, and we also have a list of dynamic stop words that are taken the most common things for that particular domain on the fly. We pre-process everything because of the size of the data set that we have. We have to do pre-processing. It takes about 12 hours to calculate all this expectation statistics over the entire corpus. And we wanted to do, similar to what Patricia showed us, we want to actually retain quick access to the original text. What we're trying to do here is help people delve into the data, not replace the act of reading. Just to show you the types of, just an example of the types of careful cleaning we had to do with this data. If we have a case, for example, where the concurring judges' names were missing, we were able to extract the date, go out into the records of the judges' service times, and combine the date and the judge's service records to replace that name back into the case. So this was a significant part of the project, but I won't talk more about it today. So how did we find the words that we're interested in? So instead of just using word counts, we're using a measure called the log likelihood measure, most popularized by Ted Dunning in 1993. I won't go into too much detail, but we count, basically the idea is we count the occurrences of a word in an analysis text and a reference text, and we calculate expectation measures between the analysis text and the reference text, so the reference text being the rest of the corpus, that's not the facet that we're interested in at the time. We combine these two expectation measures together to get a G-squared score, which can be approximates a chi-squared distribution, and so then we can translate that into a significance value. Now, I know somebody's here from SPSS, so I will acknowledge that we did do a correction here for the repeated testing factor. So we're doing like 50,000 tests, so we have quite a high a conservative measure of confidence. So we did two different forms of measurement. So we measured across the number of cases, so the cases being like if a word occurs at least once in a case, and the number of occurrences overall, so how many times does a word occur in all the cases overall. And this is the kind of thing that we get. So if we had, for example, the works of William Shakespeare, we have word count measure, we just get, this is just a made-up example, we get the most common words. In Macbeth, we might have the exact same most common words. But if we look at the log likelihood measure, we get the words that occur more frequently in Macbeth than they do in the rest of the works of Shakespeare. So the design of the visualization then is built upon this sort of expectation measure that comes from the computational linguistics community, tag clouds, which have been really popular in the last few years, and the parallel coordinate plots of Inselberg. The visual encoding we use is we take one quart and we make it a column. We make a columnar tag cloud with the top n words. The text size is relative to the significance score, and the order then is alphabetic to help people visually search for a word of interest. We had a bit of a sanity check on our system in that we, in the original prototype on the left here, we had we were able to show, for example, in the second circuit, we're getting the names of the judges and the names of the places in that circuit. So obviously, these would be the most distinguishing terms we would expect to see in that geographical region, given the other regions as a reference. We took out then all those proper nouns because what we're interested in actually are the topics of the cases that are being heard. So then we have these multiple columns. What do we do about that? So I'll have to ask you to trust me, and we can talk about it later, but we examined a lot of different types of possibilities for the visual design of how do we create tag clouds that are relating to one another without interfering with the legibility of the words in the view. What we ended up with is we went through all those different kinds, more than eight of those variations, but we ended up working with a system I called edge stubs. So here we have edges that indicate their presence and the direction that they go in, but they don't interfere with reading the words on the columns because they do not cross over the intervening columns. They're interactive, so if you highlight a word, you get to see exactly where that edge goes. So here's what it looks like in full view. I realize this looks quite overwhelming on this resolution. It was designed for a high-resolution screen, so you can come and play with it if you'd like to see it later. So coordinated views that go with the parallel tag cloud, we have graphical tooltips that highlight additional measures upon the words. So, for example, if a word is present in a particular column, it means it's distinguishing for that column. But we may actually want to know what the score was for all the other columns that it doesn't appear in. We also that's that. So we also are able to see the significant absence of a word using these tooltip graphs. So if it's the bar graph here is down, then it means that it's less than expected. But of course, we don't show less than expected words on the default view. We also have this document browser on the right. So when we select a term, we actually get these little glyphs that show how many times that that term occurs, where each bar indicates or each bar represents a document, and they're across time in the corpus. Okay, so we load the data using these sort of scented widgets here, where we see how many relatively how many cases there are in each district. And we use time as another facet of the data to filter. So I just want to show you, and you'll have to bear with me, I'm using audio on this video because of the time constraints of the talk today. And I think it'll be easier for me to get through it if I actually just let the audio play. So this is the types of interaction that are provided, or some of them.
Terms in the view to form a query over the underlying data. Here I will select several coal mining related terms that occur in both the 4th and 6th circuits. Search results are shown in a coordinated visualization called the document browser. Each document is represented by a stacked bar. Stacked bars are arranged by size and year. The relative number of occurrences of each of the select terms is shown through color coding. Each colored region on the bar represents the occurrences of the selected term of that color in the tag cloud. Here the pink bar represents occurrences of lung. The document browser and tag cloud are closely coordinated through interaction. Hovering on a document in the browser has two effects. First, words in the document are enlarged on the tag cloud and all other words are removed. This gives a visual summary of the contents of that document. The circuit containing that document is highlighted in blue. Here we see the selected document is from the 4th circuit. The second visual effect is a tooltip which contains additional information about that document. For example, the parties involved, the citation, the authoring judge, and several instances of the selected word as it is used in context. Here we see that lung is always preceded by black in this case. Black lung is a colloquial name for a specific coal mining related disease. Double-clicking the document icon reveals the original case and a complete tag cloud of its contents in the browser. By clicking the label of a column in the tag cloud, that column is selected. All documents not originating in that column are faded out in the document browser. Here we select the term patent in the tag cloud. Then we select the Federal Circuit. This reveals, through fading out, which documents contain the word patent and do not occur in the Federal Circuit. We provide several additional visual variations. First, when the data in the tag cloud changes, for example, by adjusting the time period used to populate the visualization, the new terms are highlighted in orange. This allows one to see overviews of differences and similarities across a second facet in the data, such as time. Highlights are deactivated by clicking an icon in the interface. A second visual variation is to include both significant absence as well as presence of words. We show significant absence using red text and edges. In this view, we see that patent is significantly highly occurring in the Federal Circuit and low in the others.
Okay, so I'll just return back to the presentation. So I just want to go through a couple of examples of the types of things that we found with our legal experts working on this project. So I promised you to talk a little bit about ostriches in the Seventh Circuit yesterday. So we found the term ostrich, and throughout playing with this prototype in the office, I saw this word ostrich, and the whole summer I thought, okay, well, there must be some zoo or something, and they're doing this work. It turns out, actually, that the ostrich is a specific sort of legal instruction called the ostrich instruction that's used more frequently in the Seventh Circuit than we would expect. And this was really intriguing to the legal scholars that we were working with, because they were wondering, why does the Seventh Circuit use this when they would expect it to be equally used across the whole country? And they were able to delve into the data a little bit deeper and find out that it was actually different legal clerks that worked in that area that were writing it into the decisions. We also found a judge in the First Circuit that uses very unusual words. All of the unusual words that we could find in the First Circuit column ended up being because of this particular judge. And I found out later that he's notorious with the law students they hate reading his cases. We also were able to find some sort of sociological differences geographically across the country. For example, different types of drug use, so methamphetamine in the West, versus narcotics, heroin in the East. So in conclusion, I just want to put a sort of call out to some related work. So we know about, for example, Jigsaw. It uses a visual metaphor very similar, so we have columns of terms related to one another with these lines. Here they're looking not at the types of measures that we're using to extract the terms, but instead at entities that are extracted from the data, so people. And also Fernanda's own work, Female, or Fernanda et al., I guess, or Villegas et al., where they were extracting with the TF-IDF score words from email systems, but they were not able to show significant absence, and they didn't have connections between the columns. So there's some challenges, and some of the reviewers raised some challenges with this work, and I want to actually acknowledge them. Yes, it is visually overwhelming. Yes, this is a problem. I just want to sort of throw it out there and say this is an exciting area to work in, and I think we need to do some more. So, for example, the scale of the data is still an issue. It takes 12 hours to train the system, and it was, you know, half of the summer was spent just dealing with that matter. The scale of the visualization, of course, is also a challenge. So we tried to scale it up and say, okay, well, what if we look at two-word pairs? Well, what ends up happening is that we have an exponential growth in the amount of data that we have in our database. It becomes extremely slow. The visualization becomes even harder to read. So there are challenges here. So in conclusion, I want to say that this, I think, is a generalizable analytical system that we could move beyond court cases to things like literary analysis or looking at product reviews. And to extend it, we could do things like perhaps merging the words that are similar in meaning to do some sort of semantic zooming. Or we could also, instead of using multiple different types of measurements, we could create a specific hybrid case and occurrence scoring metric. So thank you very much for listening.
Good morning, Ben Schneiderman, University of Maryland. Thank you. That was really quite wonderful, and I think you very effectively put out a lot of information. But I am curious about your design decision to make the word centered in each column rather than left justified. Mm-hmm. I think the sort of elegance about a centered approach, but I think the feeling of overwhelmedness was from the inability to make a rapid visual scan in the vertical columns. Did you discuss that issue?
Sure. That's a really good point, actually. I don't have an image to show you of a left-justified version. It is a lot nicer. The reason that I did it with the center, it's a lot nicer to read as a scan. The reason I did it to the center was in order to maximize the number of words that I could fit. So actually what can happen here, how can I explain this better? If I can get my mouse over. By centering the words, basically the font scaling allows us, in the worst case scenario, to have words that overlap with one another. So if we have two long words, they're going to overlap. But we push the font scaling really high so that we can read more words. But because they're centered, they're less likely to overlap that way.
I just question that decision. I think if you do left justified and right truncation when needed, I think you'll find a more effective display.
Yeah, we don't do any truncation at all. Yeah. But yeah, that might be a better solution.
And I think there's rare cases where right truncation is problematic, but you could fix those too. The other is, do you allow the columns to be switched in order? Because one of the puzzling things is when you have these leaps across. So when you're looking at relationships, wouldn't it be nice to reorder the columns either automatically or manually?
Yes, I completely agree with you. We did allow for reordering of the columns in an early prototype, but if because of the geographic nature of the data that we're using, it wasn't very useful for the legal scholars themselves to reorder the data. But in a general case, yes, I think it would actually be better to automatically reorder the columns, I think, to suggest perhaps what the most similar circuits are to one another before actually showing an initial view.
Right. Yes. I mean, the circuit numbers are known very well to people, but when you are comparing distant ones, it's very problematic, and you could make an easy approach by which they would shift them.
I think it would be easier, but I think we're going to have lines going over adjacent like columns no matter what. But yes.
It's a problem in parallel coordinates, but you could reduce the prevalence of those things. But otherwise, Bravo, I think, very nice idea and leads the way forward for a wide variety of tools. And I think also finding a place where it works, where you don't have just the simple numbering of courts, but you have a taxonomy by which you group the documents would also be a facilitator for making this a more general tool.
For sure, yeah. I mean, the paper is called Parallel Tag Clouds for Faceted Text Corpora. We could divide the same data up across the judges' names, for example, and it would be the same thing.
So, bravo.
Thank you. Yes, we did, actually. The very first version I made, I ordered the words from top to bottom by their score. So we had sort of the most important word at the top of each column. What happened there was that the most important word is always the largest word. So we have these large words all across the top, and then it gets really skinny down to the bottom. So we have much less, lower ability to sort of push up the font size, because we have if we make the most significant word in each column adjacent to one another, then they're definitely going to overlap. So if we spread them out alphabetically, we end up with the ability to push the font size higher with a lower incidence of this overlapping occurring. So it is a bit of a trade-off, but yes.